Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, September 28th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT9. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us from far, far across the distant, vast desert
the universe
that separates
almost
California from Utah, Mr. Scott Johnson.
So Nevada then. Yes, welcome back. Welcome me back. And hello, you guys. I'm always happy to be on the show.
Hey, it's good to have you back, Scott.
Hello, you, Scott. Thanks.
And I apologize. I'm going to apologize right here at the top of the show for missing my appearance on Current Geek on Scott Johnson's The Morning Stream. This morning, it was all Jeff Bezos' fault.
I blame Bezos. I could hear him laughing maniacally in the background as it happened. But no, you had stuff to do. Like, there was nothing going on today until Amazon started to get up and say stuff. And so you had to be there. You're the man with the plan. And it's no problem. We'll do it again next week.
Of course, if it started any earlier, it would have been yesterday.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, quit your complaining, West Coasters. It was 10 a.m. on the East Coast.
You live on the West Coast.
I'm aware. That's why, to me, it's still somewhat real time.
Okay.
That's why you were so chipper this morning. You're still on East Coast time.
I'm always chipper. Gosh. Damn it.
That's, you know what? Let's not tell tall tales.
Leo, myself, and Iaz all got up ungodly early for normal people and dragged ourselves into the studio to cover the 7 a.m. Pacific time announcement of the new Amazon Kindle lineup. Let me run through the lineup and then get your guys' impressions on this. And I don't mean imitations. I mean what you think of these.
I'm a Kindle.
Four new Kindles were announced. The base model is just called the Kindle. It's the brand new Kindle. Has no keyboard, is Wi-Fi only. Just you navigate around with some buttons down at the bottom of the screen. It's very simple, but the attractive part of it, available for $79. Now, these prices that they gave out are the subsidized version. In other words, you're getting advertisements on the lock screen and in some of the screens inside, like you do with the current $149 Kindle. So $79 Kindle is $109 if you don't want the ads. And that's going to go for these other e-ink Kindles as well. The Kindle Touch has two versions, a $99 version or $139 if you don't want the ads, which has an infrared touch screen. So Kindle finally getting a touch screen, catching up with the Sony Reader for 5 years ago. And if you want to spend $149, it has built-in free 3G, like the Kindle has had since the first one. That's $149 or $189 without ads. Both of those Kindle Touch versions ship November 21st. Now, I should point out that the Kindle, that $79 Kindle, actually ships today. It's available for order. You can have it tomorrow if you want to pay for overnight shipping. And then the big announcement, Kindle Fire. $199, no subsidized price. This is not an advertising-based price. $199 is the only price you can play for the Kindle Fire. 7-inch, looks like it turned out to be the Quanta hardware that's very similar to the BlackBerry Playbook. Color, why are you exploding it?
It's the fire.
Oh, right.
Jeez,
not the
Tom.
Only product we have that calls
it's not like Jason started that
name. Spelling it out Wednesday.
Color, it's a color screen. It's got video. It's got magazines. It's got an app store. It's based on, we think, Android 2.3. Ours Technica reported Android 3.1, but everybody else is reporting Android 2.3.
Doesn't have 3G.
It does not. It is only Wi-Fi. It has no camera. It has no GPS. But what it does, it looks like it does well. It's very snappy, although they wouldn't let any of the reporters touch it. They would demonstrate it for reporters. And that touchscreen looks pretty good. This is a multi-touch screen, two-finger multi-touch. Your apps can be pinned down at the bottom, and you can see it plays Angry Birds. It's got magazines. It's got the ability to get movies from Amazon Instant Streaming. You get 30 days free in Amazon Prime, which gives you the free two-day shipping as well as the access to all of the Instant Streaming categories. So what do you guys think? Are you impressed with any and or all of these Kindles?
Well, it only has 8 gigabytes of internal storage. So the fact that it's linked to Amazon's cloud services is really important.
And it comes with unlimited cloud storage.
Right. So if you keep buying Amazon content, this is great. With that free 30-day trial for Prime Video, I'm thinking this is going to be like that first taste, and you want to keep accessing all of these videos. I mean, it's pretty smart, because the other thing is it has its own version of Whisper Sync for videos. So if you wanted to watch on your – I keep wanting to call this the playbook. I keep seeing it, I think, playbook.
Well, it looks like one.
But if you want to watch on your Fire or then move it to your TV, you could just launch the same application and see it from that same point. So I think it's a good start. I mean, it's a really good start. I'm just very curious about what's the next generation already. But $199, hard to beat with that.
I'm more excited about the Kindle Touch, actually. I mean, I already have a tablet that I'm happy with. This is not the sort of thing that I would need in addition to my iPad. Now, if you have an Android tablet that you're not that happy with, might be a different story. Or no tablet at all. That's a different story, but this definitely isn't the sort of thing where you go, "Ooh, I want to switch over." But I love the idea of the Kindle Touch. I mean, that's what I feel that people do need both of, because tablets can be really annoying. You go outside, you can't read anything. I like this. $100.
Scott, what did you think? Did you get a chance to look at all these?
Yeah, I did. And I was watching the coverage pretty early. In fact, we kept popping over and sneaking an earshot of what you guys were talking about during the show this morning. And all rights reserved, I suppose. But we were I'm kind of impressed with the Fire in this one sense. Number one, the price, because that is an entry level price that will improve a lot of people's opinion as to whether or not they feel like they need a device like this. They're not ready to throw $500 at an iPad yet. And the only thing to me that this is missing, or that is an unknown factor so far, is how robust this app store will be. Because I've said this before. The iPad is great and all, but the iPad, honestly, for me anyway, is nothing without a robust app store and a robust app ecosystem. If this device can provide that for a lot of people, then I think this is an incredibly great price, and I'm tempted to get one myself given that fact. But I think that's yet to be seen, and Iaz is right. Second generation, third generation, that may change, you know, everything in terms of where it stands toe-to-toe with something like an iPad, but right now, it feels like a really daring entry-level price into a very hard-to-compete-in market. And it's impressive, I think.
Scott, do you have a 3G iPad? Because I was asking the guys before the show, don't you think it's kind of weird that the Fire doesn't have 3G? And they said, no, not really. But I come across apps updating over 3G when I'm out of a Wi-Fi zone on my iPad all the time, really handy.
Yeah, I think 3G is a weird thing to be missing here, especially when you can see it in the other model. I don't think it would have killed him to say, and we've got a $299 model or a $249 model with Wi-Fi or with 3G service, even if it wasn't sort of a free 3G service that's tied directly to just getting books or certain content. If it was something people had to get a plan for, I think people would have liked to have heard that. And my guess is second generation 3G or whatever connectivity is hot at the time will be part of this package. And that'll be, that's a major thing for a lot of people. So Sarah, you're not wrong. If you want to do that stuff on the fly, it's hard to when you're tied to Wi-Fi all the time.
If the stories about them rushing this were true, they probably didn't have time to get plans in place and get a carrier deal, and didn't want to raise the price so much that they would include it, because you're going to use a lot more data on this thing than you would use on a Kindle Touch.
The battery life on this thing is kind of low at up to 8 hours with wireless off. I mean, when you have a Kindle and you have that name on it, it used to be like, 2 to 3 months? People think e-ink, they think lifetime 3G. I'm thinking potentially they don't even want to confuse consumers to say, look, you need a plan now, or it's going to cost you an arm and a leg to get lifetime 3G. It might just be like, okay, look, is this going to sell? Are people going to want this? Because I don't think Amazon's going to continue with this if it doesn't do well, and they probably will do very well.
What? Hasn't the Nook Color become a real tough sell?
Well, Barnes & Noble is going to announce a new Nook, and the pressure is now on them because everyone's saying, hey, this kills the Nook.
I mean, when you look at them side by side,
it's $50
it's like,
cheaper, and it does more.
It's lighter.
I think a lot of the rumors of this being a disappointing piece of hardware pre-release didn't pan out. The hardware looks like it's fine. Now, we still got to get one in our hands. They wouldn't let anybody touch it. So there may be hidden problems. But in that video we were showing from TechCrunch earlier, it was showing multiple things running on one device. It looked snappy. Mm-hmm. It didn't look like it was a video playing, demonstrating the things. It looked like he was really controlling it. So I'm pretty hopeful about that. I do think what Amazon has done very smart here is seize the ground from Apple on price. and said, great, Apple's the premium. You pay more for their laptops, you're going to pay more for their tablets. What they've ceded to Apple is productivity and creation. So you want to make pages, you want to do numbers, you want to create things in GarageBand, you want to shoot films and movies and edit them, that's the iPad. We're not going to do that. What most people use tablets for, though, is maybe checking some email, watching some video, playing some games, and reading books. And you can do all of that stuff on the Kindle Fire at a price point that is $300 cheaper than the cheapest Apple iPad.
Well, Apple makes Apple makes so much money on its hardware, flat out. And the thing is, if they have the app ecosystem, they make some money on those apps, they continue to make money on that. But Amazon is going to make money on everything they sell through this device because it's going to link to the Amazon App Store. You're going to the Amazon App Store, the Amazon store proper, the books, anything you want, you'll probably go through their site first because you have your Fire. You're like, oh, I'll buy this with one click on my Amazon tablet, which already has your account details in there when you get it in the mail. So I mean,
the thing I noticed about this is it seems like it's a two-tiered approach. You have all of this new lineup of readers, and these are, you know, e-ink, we're back to basics, they're inexpensive, they're cool, and everybody wants a good e-reader, and those are for books. And then there's this other thing for their new video initiatives and their cloud initiatives and music and everything else. Yeah, there's web and there's email and there's apps and games, but it seems like it's just like their, you know, it's an e-reader equivalent for movies and music perhaps. And that's an interesting way to sort of make that separation. I'm also really impressed to see Jeff Bezos up there doing Steve Jobs style keynote. I thought that was kind of cool. Seems like everybody's doing that. We get that from a little bit from Facebook this week or this month, and now we got Jeff up there doing it. So that's an interesting way to get up and push new hardware. And I think it works. It works for Apple. It works for everybody else. But you know, this two-tiered approach is interesting because you know they're not even really pushing. And the Kindle Fire says web, movies, apps, games, reading, and more. It's like reading's the second to last thing with more. And that's I think, a little unusual because they're not pushing so much the reading with that as they are these other features.
It seems to have really caused a lot of enthusiasm, which is what you want out of a product announcement like this. In fact, Alan from Roanoke already wrote in to TNT at twit.tv, watched the coverage this morning, and said, the thing that jumped out at me is that the Kindle Fire is really a competitor to the iPod. I have nine and 11-year-old daughters who used to be attached to their Nintendo DSs, but they're now gathering dust since they got iPod Touches last Christmas. Getting them each an iPad or an iPhone with a data plan is not an option, but getting them a Kindle Fire, that is a possibility. This creates pressure on Apple because there is a real possibility that it introduces a whole generation of kids to consuming Amazon content versus Apple content. I think we've kind of touched on these points already, but it's the idea of, hey, you know what? I'm not going to buy a $499 device for my kid, but I might buy a $199 device, at least for my 11-year-old.
Yeah, I think it's
And if they buy them a lot for kids, I know my kids would love something like this. They don't really care. They don't have that much brand dedication. So if they saw this, they'd get really excited. But I still maintain that excitement will wane if there is not a big, robust number of apps, specifically games, on the cheap, available on that app store and quick, because I think that is going to be key in this if the Fire wants to succeed.
Now, the other thing they announced as part of the Kindle Fire is something called the Silk Web Browser. It's a WebKit-based web browser that Amazon has developed specifically for the Kindle Fire. They call it a split browser. Amazon has a cloud hosting service called EC2, and EC2 is going to provide part of the work of downloading and rendering pages. Silk can be run in off-cloud mode, which means it operates just like every other browser and goes out on the internet and finds stuff and brings it back to you. But when you run it on cloud, it works with EC2 as sort of a cache plus proxy for browsing, and EC2 can then dynamically take over parts of the page rendering. So essentially, the URL goes to EC2. EC2 goes and looks for all the assets, the cascading style sheets, the HTML, the images. And because EC2 hosts a large part of the internet, they can get a lot of your pages without having to leave their own servers, which saves them money on transit costs, but it also increases
faster
the speed
for the end user.
And then it takes all of that stuff. It looks at your connection and says, okay, I think this amount could be handled by the Kindle Fire itself, but we'll render the rest of it and send it to the Kindle Fire. So that increases the speed. Even if it's getting content from off of EC2, it's got optical connections to the rest of the internet, so that's faster. They say this is really going to speed up your browsing without changing your experience. You'll feel like you're using any other browser. It's very similar to what Opera already does. And the browser maintains a single persistent connection to Amazon's cloud, hence Silk. It's a thin but strong connection. That's why they're calling it Silk. They use the Google Speedy protocol, by the way. So you're sending a lot of information through Amazon's server in trade-off for performance. Does that bother anybody?
Offhand, I don't think so. I mean, for me, it doesn't bother me necessarily. I already trust Amazon with my credit card information. If they're going to be the man in the middle seeing everything I'm doing, it just means instead of Google seeing it, it'll be Amazon. What I'm more interested in with Silk Browser is the fact that things will be faster, even with an older piece of hardware, because the processors in this thing aren't like the most advanced. So even maybe, you know, a couple of years down, it still will feel as fast because you'll be offloading more of the work on another machine. So if you're effectively streaming the web to a device, it doesn't need to be as powerful because it doesn't have to do Flash if you don't want it to. It doesn't have to do HTML5 video if you don't want it to.
It will do Flash natively, so expect Hulu to block it November 15th when it ships.
Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't have an issue at all with Amazon scene, but if you're using Amazon regularly, they're already offering up ideas of what you might like to buy next based on what you've been doing on Amazon lately. I mean, you're buying an Amazon branded device, 100% Amazon. It seems like it makes sense. This is a really good idea. I wonder how much Opera gave them the great idea, and then they went, wait a second, and we have EC2. This is just the perfect...
Well, Internet Explorer has also done something similar to this, so it's not like Amazon is, you know, only imitating Opera. This is a policy that's been around. It's just right. Amazon is using it to good effect here. Mm-hmm. They're also fetching elements ahead of you based on the behavior of everyone who uses the Silk browser, so that they find out what page you're likely to go to next and start pre-rendering that on EC2 so they can deliver it to you faster. Now, does it change the calculus of what they know about you? Scott, does this bother you how much they're going to have all of the browsing history of everybody who's ever used the Silk browser in aggregate, they say? They're not going to attach it to individuals.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's essentially what we get from Google, right? Every service we use from Google is sort of that same claim. That's how we get predictive search and all this other stuff. And I think I'm fine with it. The bigger and reputable the company is, the less I care about what information they have for me. That being said, you know, sometimes Amazon trips up, like their cloud storage solutions for some hosting stuff that really affected me in a bad way not long ago. And that sort of thing gives me just a little bit of pause. But for the most part, I think what they've been doing already, plus this, really pushes them forward and maybe puts them ahead of the curve when it comes to cloud storage, better yet, cloud computing. And that's so much happening on server side that it's making it so we can have dumber and dumber terminals. And I believe that is the future. So people may have some struggle with some of this privacy stuff up front, but in the long haul, this is the path we're on, I believe.
But if it's not attached to any individual,
Well, it's the fear that somebody's going to find that data.
Are you insinuating that they're not being honest with us?
I'm not insinuating anything.
Okay.
I'm just saying, you're awfully trusting all three of you.
There's always a fear that someone's going to break into Amazon, get this data, and then figure out a way to match it to you.
Reverse engineering.
Because I know when Firefox was doing things like prefetching, people turned that off. One, it was slowing down performance, and two, people just didn't want this thing going on in the background all the time. Google is a similar thing with instant pages, where it's they didn't call it prefetching, but effectively it's the same thing. So if Amazon's doing this, it's about how good is their security, really? Because the first time this thing's attacked, and if it can be found that, okay, this browsing history matches up with Sarah Lane, well, maybe you'll start caring. Maybe, I mean,
well,
could be a big thing.
Well, what if you and I have really similar browsing habits? How did they know it was me and not you?
Well, remember that AOL data dump where people were able to reverse engineer? Apparently, even if your habits are similar, it's easy to figure out. Not easy, but it's possible to figure out who you are just from your browsing habits. That's what people are worried about. You can turn it off. That's the saving grace. If you are like me, wanting to put on a tinfoil hat, you can choose to go in off-cloud mode, and then Amazon is no different than your ISP as far as, you know, carrying data through. If you got to be able to trust Amazon as much as you trust your ISP to use on-cloud mode, or you can just turn it off and use it as a regular browser. I think it'll be interesting to see if Amazon takes Silk to other platforms. After they've tested it out on Kindle Fire and got it working and worked out all the bugs, you may see a desktop version of Silk, and that would be an interesting entry into the browser wars.
It's based on WebKit, so it can run on anything. iOS, Chrome devices, not Chrome devices, excuse me, Android devices, and the desktop. So it should be pretty easy to port it over once they want to.
It'd be really fun to go back in time and say to my, I don't know, my 19, or let's say my 2001 self and say, Amazon, that company that sells your books online, they're going to be a major player in personal electronics one day. I think I wouldn't have believed myself. And I should have bought stock, of course. So
I think you have trust issues. You should believe yourself, Scott.
Well, don't worry. Right. Amazon's working on time travel, so you'll be able to go back and have that conversation.
Fantastic.
MeeGo is not dead.
Wait a second.
For those of you who don't remember what MeeGo is, it's the open source operating system that is the love child of Intel's Moblin and Nokia's MIMO that Nokia abandoned, and Intel's left as a single parent of this operating system, not knowing what to do. They announced today that the Linux Foundation will be hosting the Tizen project, or the Tizen project.
Or the Tizen.
In conjunction with Samsung. Intel and Samsung will lead the development. So a big name on board to develop this operating system. Also joining the effort is the LIMO Foundation. We talked about them yesterday. Panasonic, NEC, NTT Docomo, a bunch of people are part of the LIMO Foundation. It is going to be centered around HTML5 apps, support multiple device categories, including tablets, handsets, TVs, in-vehicle entertainment. It's another operating system, and MeeGo apps will be compatible on Tizen. It's not MeeGo. It's a whole new operating system. But they're sort of saying, look, if you liked MeeGo, you're going to love whatever this is pronounced as, Tizen. Because you can run your MeeGo apps on it, so keep developing your MeeGo apps. We'll kind of keep MeeGo on life support over here in the corner. Linux Foundation will run it, and then we'll move you all over to Tizen and hopefully take over Android and iOS by having a truly open source, open foundation product based around HTML5. Now, I guess that's the big difference between this and MeeGo. Is they're focusing on HTML5 as the way to write apps for it.
A web-based operating system, something like a web OS.
It's very similar to web OS.
Right. It's up against a huge amount of competition. I mean, iOS, Android, Windows Phone 7, RIM, even with its QNX operating system, this is a very, very difficult journey for this. For what is this called again? Tizen?
Tizen. We think it's not Tarzan. Something like Tizen.
Tizen.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think we're going to be seeing Tizen devices taking over the world right away, because unless it can run Android apps, and even that might be helpful for it. I mean, were there a lot of MeeGo developers that are like, oh, I have a future now.
Tizen. Samsung likes to put their weight behind multiple operating systems. They're on Android. They toyed around with buying WebOS. They ended up deciding definitely not to do it.
They have their
Bada OS that they're open sourcing, the part that sits on top of the proprietary system. So Tizen could actually be the underpinnings for Bada. And they're on Android. So that's a big name to have on board for this. I think it's an excellent effort, and I think MeeGo was probably doomed, so it's good to start fresh, use HTML5, because that's where everybody is developing, that's where a lot of people's developing efforts are being put, and try a truly open source competitor to Android, which is based on open source but is not open source. It's managed very strictly by Google.
Well, if they get their foot in enough embedded device type situations that aren't phones, because Iaz is right. I agree with him. This is a uphill battle of all uphill battles if you want to compete in that space. So maybe they get embedded solutions on, I don't know, fancy cars. They sign a deal with BMW where all their cars are running on something that's based on Tizen, and it's similar to Ford Sync or whatever, and it takes on the world, and everybody can't believe how amazing it is. And then they can kind of work their way through fridges and other stuff. But eventually, maybe we look at it and go, wow, they've had such great success in these other sort of embedded applications. Why not phones? Why not that sort of thing? And then maybe. But it's still going to take a lot to get people like, I mean, Samsung's one thing, but you got to get everybody else, all these other handset manufacturers, excited about it when already they're all so steeped in Android. I don't know what tears them away. So it's an uphill battle either way.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, there's no disrespect to that point of view, but yeah, I think it is an important effort to be taken, and I'm glad that two big names, Intel and Samsung, are behind it. I hope it does at least get some traction in the next year or so. What did they say? They're going to release the code in Q1, and then hope to see devices running it by the midpoint of next year. So it's a 2012 effort. We'll have to wait and see. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high quality website or blog. If you want to start a Go Tizen blog, you could do it right now. GoTizen.squarespace.com. You'll have it running before I finish telling you about Squarespace if you go start it right now. In fact, if you do get it running, put the link in the chat room. Support Tizen, support Squarespace, support Twit, support TNT, all in one go. Or you could make an anti-Tizen site. Actually, Squarespace doesn't care. They'll let you express yourself however you want to express yourself. And they offer online resources and a support team to give you personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Your service includes modules to build your website, an import service to take all of your content from your old blog, form builders, Flickr photo display, Twitter widgets, social media buttons, Google Maps, website tracking, can search engine optimize. Everything you need to do to make a website is there. But you don't have to take our word for it. Go try it out. You don't even need to put in a credit card. There's no trial fee. You don't have to give them anything that you have to cancel later. You get to try it out for free. Go to squarespace.com, start a site like that. You'll have a professional quality site. And if you decide to purchase it, use the code TNT9 and get 10% off for 6 months. That's squarespace.com. The offer code is TNT9. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Well, it is time for a report on the patent wars. Big news, actually.
It's a good thing we haven't covered patents in a really long time.
Yeah, I know, right? Microsoft has conquered Samsung on the Android front. Samsung today agreed to a licensing deal with Microsoft for the intellectual property that Microsoft claims to have in Android. HTC and Acer and a group of five other Android device manufacturers have previously agreed to these terms. This is the one where we think HTC is paying $5 per Android phone to Microsoft. So Microsoft making a lot of money off of Android phones being sold. Motorola Mobility, the number three Android seller, is now the only major Android manufacturer not to have signed one of these licensing deals.
Just so happened to be. Bought by Google.
Oh, look at that. They're going to be bought by Google soon. So this is shaping up to be a Google versus Microsoft head-to-head war.
Well, listen, it actually builds a little bit on Tizen, if you think about it. If Samsung wants to get away from paying Microsoft about this, they can go, look, we have another operating system. We're not using Android anymore. We're not paying you anything. I mean, it can make that a much more serious competitor. And the fact is, Samsung already used so many operating systems. It bought a Windows Phone 7, probably to pay off Microsoft a bit. They might release Tizen. Might release some more Windows Phone handsets than they were originally planning to do.
Yeah, it says that they have also agreed to cooperate in the development and marketing of Windows Phone 7.5, particularly Mango. Google was not happy and put out a statement saying, this is the same tactic we've seen time and again from Microsoft. Failing to succeed in the smartphone market, they are resorting to legal measures to extort profit from other achievements and hinder the pace of innovation. We remain focused on building new technology and supporting Android partners.
Microsoft doesn't seem to be too flustered by that.
They're not.
Frank Shaw from Microsoft went on Twitter and said, let me boil down the Google statement they gave to Per Slimane at TechCrunch from 48 words to one.
Microsoft's got the patents and Google's crying about it Google could have had these patents. They could have made their own. They could have done this a while ago.
Well, I mean, okay.
But they didn't.
You said Google's crying about it. I mean,
yep.
Their statement sounds like wah-wah to you.
Hang on now. Google is not some small company. If it's an independent app developer getting pushed around, I could see them complaining about this. Mm-hmm. This is Google. They have serious money. They can cross-license anything they want. If they're going to say, well, Microsoft's pushing us around because their legal team managed to patent something that we should have looked into when we bought Android a couple years ago. Well, you know what? That's too dang bad. You're an educated party. You know what's going on. You're sophisticated. Shut up about it.
You know what? The problem here is that we're treating these like they're emotional entities. These are companies. The reason Google put the statement out is they want to win public opinion over to their side. They know exactly what you just said is absolutely true.
Yeah, the lawyers would say, sophisticated parties, you guys are done.
The marketing department said, well, the only way we're going to win this battle in the public mind is to make Microsoft look evil.
I'm just surprised Microsoft would respond with that kind of being that flippant. It just seems a little silly
now,
professionally.
What I think is more interesting is what this means for Barnes & Noble, Motorola, which are both being sued by Microsoft. Will they settle quicker because of this? And more importantly, Amazon just put out an Android tablet. Now, it is heavily skinned with Amazon's own top layer. Does that change the patent issue? I don't know what patents are being negotiated here, so I don't know. But when asked about it by All Things D, Microsoft General Counsel Brad Smith said, ultimately, we will see licensing regimes emerge. That doesn't mean that there won't be some dramatic events between now and the time that happens. So he's saying, well, we'll always settle, but that doesn't mean that we won't have some friction. So maybe they are going to go after Amazon in court.
Amazon and Microsoft worked together in the past over the Kindle, but it was a particularly different patent system. So they have a pre-existing relationship. The question is that the same? What's going to happen in the future? Probably not. It's hard to tell. But, Microsoft wants money. They don't really care how they get it. It's like, look, if you're going to pay them to use their patents, that's fine. That's a complete win. They don't want to go to court.
I mean, Samsung and HTC together having to give Microsoft money every time one of their handsets is sold. I don't know.
One of their Android handsets. So the Windows phone. Well, Windows phone, they're paying them, I guess. Right? So anytime they sell a Bata phone or a feature phone, they don't have to pay. So they might push those more.
But they make a lot of money from HTC already. So my point is, with Samsung, let's just say it was in the same range, and we don't know that yet. It's a lot of money for Microsoft. It's shrewd business.
Yeah, this is business, after all.
It's just the language of it that throws you off. I mean, just to hear these guys, it sounds like a schoolyard fight. And I half expect Ballmer to come out all sweaty, ready with his, you know, hands in the air.
That's what they want you to think. They want you to get all emotionally
involved
in this.
Extortion.
Yeah.
I want him to do that, actually. I hope he will.
A Justice Department internal memo has been uncovered by the ACLU of North Carolina, thanks to a Freedom of Information request, that reveals the data retention policies of America's largest telecoms. It's called Retention Periods of Major Cellular Service Providers, and it was for law enforcement use only, dated August 2010. It's a guide for law enforcement agencies looking to get information about suspects, things like IP addresses, call logs, text messages, etc. Turns out that Verizon keeps a list of everyone you've exchanged text messages with for up to a year. Now, T-Mobile stores the same data for up to 5 years.
5 years.
Sprint does it for 18 months, so a year and a half, and AT&T stores it for 7 years. Now, before
this is just information about the fact that you and I exchanged a text, not the content, right?
This number sent a text message to this number. Now, before you get too happy for Verizon being the lowest on this list, Verizon will also store the content of text messages for 5 days. So, Scott, what you're talking about, Verizon actually, you know, if you get to them within 5 days, can tell you what was said between those two numbers. The other carriers do not store the content of text messages at all. And the really interesting one is phone movement history. So being able to say, well, it pinged this tower and this tower, and so we can kind of say it was at this location. Phone movement history, Verizon keeps for a 1 year rolling basis. T-Mobile keeps it for a year or more. Sprint up to 2 years. And AT&T keeps your cell phone movement location for indefinite time periods. Anything going back to July 2008, they got it.
Wow. Look, if I sext Iaz, for example.
This is a constant problem. We have to talk
just
about that later.
Just hypothetically, if the two of you were just sexting.
Yeah. Right, purely hypothetically speaking, if I did that, I'm more comfortable knowing that AT&T knows that I texted you at some point in 7 years, but a lot less comfortable knowing that that Verizon knows exactly what I sent you 4 days ago or whatever. And I'm sure there are other people out there that are freaking out about this, but it's an interesting number, right? Like 7 years sounds terrible on AT&T's part until you kind of get into the nitty gritty here. And really, it's that short term hanging on to the text thing I don't like at all.
I can just see the law enforcement officers being like, all right, what do we got? What's this guy been talking? Who's he been talking to the last 5 days? Is he on Verizon? Yes. All right, let's read it. Where's this guy been? What's been his, you know, his habits the last couple of years? AT&T?
Yes.
We got it. Well, and you know what? The real important thing about this information is it is necessary to have an intelligent debate about when this information should require a warrant, when it should require a court order, and when it should not be available at all. And those are all being fought in court, and legislation is being considered on those issues right now. So this is important information to have when you're considering, like, well, should you need a warrant for that? Well, if AT&T is storing movement location information forever, then the possibility of it being obtained goes way up. Maybe you should have a warrant because that information isn't going anywhere. Verizon only stores the content of a text message for 5 days. Maybe a court order is sufficient because of, you know, I need to get to it and I need to get to it fast, and a warrant takes longer. You may or may not agree with those statements, but those are the kinds of evaluations you're going to make, and you need to have this kind of information if you're going to decide what is the best for the community interest. Finally, cable companies saying they're changing their tune on a la carte cable TV. Now, that sounds great, right? Everybody wants a la carte cable
TV. That's why I became a cord cutter. Now I can just pick the channels I want on cable. Awesome.
Exactly. So it would allow you to drop high-cost sports channels like ESPN if you don't watch sports. In fact, Jerry Kent, chief executive of a cable company called Suddenlink, said, "We feel some of those expensive channels should be offered a la carte, so only those people who want to watch them actually pay for them." That sounds perfectly reasonable. However, Craig Moffitt, a cable analyst at Bernstein Research, points out, it could be a la carte, but not as people imagine it now. He's pointing out that essentially what these companies are trying to do is create more tiers. They're trying to create a more complex charging system where you buy a basic package, which is probably just going to have the channels that are required to carry by law, and then you can add packages on top of it, like a sports package and a lifestyle package and a movie package and a features package and a ladies package.
But you wouldn't have to worry about that. Yeah. You can get the super premium deluxe version that's got the same amount of content that you get now, but it only costs $100 extra for convenience, because it's a super gold package.
This is not sounding as good as it did at first.
No, this is definitely not going to be, I want these 18 channels, right. How much do I pay?
Yeah.
You're going to say, I want these 18 channels. They're like, then you need these six packages. Yeah. And you're also still getting a bunch of channels you
don't want. You want the Golden Egg Plus package.
Yeah.
Which comes with eggs.
Which comes with some lady channels. I don't
honestly
know what those
Tom,
are, by the way.
Tom had me Lifetime. At the lady package. Yeah.
Ladies channels could
package.
Go either way.
Yeah.
You go lots of ways, to be honest.
But look at it this way. So lady package, great, whatever. But or sports package. I understand what they're doing, but what I want is, and this is what we're not getting right now. I wonder if it's a step in the right direction, but I just want to say, give me Discovery, give me ESPN2, and give me, I don't know, the Hallmark Channel. Give me, those aren't my favorite channels, but give me those three channels.
Yeah.
And be done with me. Off you go. And if I have to buy a little basic local thing, fine. But let me just pick and choose that way. We're probably way far from that still, right?
It sounds like all this means is you're going to have more complex decisions that will cost you more. That's my interpretation.
Well, the theory is supposed to be that because ESPN and Disney require a lot of payment for their channels, that if you went with the smaller tier packages with, not Discovery, let's pick something like the History Channel or something like that, or just a particular set of a smaller company. I don't know who owns History, actually. That should be cheaper at your final bill. That's the theory behind it. That's probably not what's going to happen in practice.
Well, you may be paying less for fewer channels.
Yeah. But so you're getting the channels you
can
you want.
Theoretically reduce. Well, but they're still going to throw them in packages. You're not going to get just the channels you want.
It's like,
you're
it's
not
like,
going to be able to pick the channels.
It's like buying drinks at a bar versus buying them at the supermarket. Okay, you're going to pay a premium.
No. It's like buying drinks at a bar, but you have to buy all the gin and tonics, not just one, with all the different types of gin and all the different types of tonics, so that you can get the one gin and tonic. You don't have to buy every drink in the bar. You don't even have to buy all the possible drinks you could make with gin. You get the gin and tonic package, and you get six gin and tonics.
So we're going to the bar when?
Yeah, no. Making you thirsty, isn't it?
All the time.
Let's move on to the news piece. Free Press, an ardent supporter of net neutrality, has filed a lawsuit to get the FCC's net neutrality rules reviewed. Wait, what? Free Press is a supporter of net neutrality. Why would they do this? Free Press says the rules are simply not strong enough. The FCC's rules would provide exemptions for wireless carriers, and Free Press says the distinction between wireless and wired operators is arbitrary and capricious. The FCC finalized its rules last week, and they were to go into effect on the 20th November. So I was expecting Verizon to get to court first, but look at Free Press. Nice job.
There's a new Humble Bundle out today. If you don't know what that is, these are gaming bundling experiments that let users buy collections of DRM-free indie video games online in a pay-what-you-want manner, and then the proceeds go directly to developers and charities. So it's cool. But this one's a little different. Called the Humble Frozen Synapse Bundle. If you pay the average price for Frozen Synapse, you'll get that one game. If you want a bunch more games, you'll have to pay more than the average price. So there's an incentive. Portion of your purchase price will go to the EFF and Child's Play, which is the charity that donates toys and games and more to children's hospitals in North America.
Just a quick note, Frozen Synapse, awesome, awesome game. And I am not kidding about that. It's one of the coolest indie games this year, period. It's amazing.
So even if you just want to pay just for the one, it's worth it.
And it's cross-platform.
It's worth that game.
So
yes.
Mac, Windows, Linux support this time. 9to5 Mac has found some new inventory SKUs in the Apple Store that point to a couple of new iPhones and an iPod Touch. The Apple Store may be a little lighter because rumors are swirling that Apple will discontinue the iPod Classic and the iPod Shuffle this year. Apple's killed the super popular iPod Mini in its prime, So what are the facts? What do we actually know? Apple's going to have an event on the 4th of October.
Yeah, they don't know the rest of the facts.
That we know.
That's all we know.
Last year, Google sued the United States for awarding contracts to Microsoft unfairly, in their opinion, and won an injunction. Judge Susan Braden recently declared that there was a justifiable basis for the dispute, which all looked good for Google. Then last week, Google decided to drop the suit altogether, filing a motion in the U.S. Federal Court or U.S. Court of Federal Claims. Google says the U.S. Department of Interior has changed its ways. The feds, however, say they have no idea what Google is talking about, but hey, they're happy to be out of court, so whatever.
Watch out, Silicon Valley, because New York wants to be home to more than just bagels and pizza that people fold into two.
Foldy pizza.
Five semiconductor manufacturing giants, including IBM, Samsung, and Intel, have promised $4.4 billion to work on developing chip technology in the state of New York, allowing them to share resources to advance chip manufacturing, including making chips on 450-millimeter wafers that you fold. Just kidding. You don't.
Foldy wafer.
Then you can fold at home. This is my next point out that Android tablet makers have a pattern of issuing 10-inch tablets, then shrinking them and selling them as separate models for less, although Amazon seems to be doing that in reverse. In any case, Toshiba is following the pattern with the Thrive 7-inch. Pretty much the same specs as a regular Thrive, and it's available in early December for $400.
Seems so expensive now after the
7-inch tablet, $400.
Today marks the one-year anniversary of the Document Foundation, or the TDF. Not the TDF, it's just TDF. And the LibreOffice project, which is a fork of OpenOffice.org. LibreOffice doing very well. Thank you very much. TDF estimates that there are now 25 million LibreOffice users worldwide. Ars Technica has an excellent write-up of the success of LibreOffice since Oracle essentially ended OpenOffice in April by spinning it off to almost no one. So LibreOffice, if you like a free office suite, check it out. It's great.
I have an impression of T-Mobile Chief Marketing Officer Cole Broadman. Okay, this is it. Look at me, Apple. Look at me, Apple. Look at me, please. Why?
We're not looking, Cole.
He published an open letter. That was interpretive dance, but he published an open letter to customers on Monday explaining why T-Mobile won't have the iPhone. He wrote, "Please know that we think the iPhone is a great device, and Apple knows that we'd like to add it to our lineup." But he also acknowledges unlocked iPhones. Today, there are over a million T-Mobile customers using unlocked iPhones on our network.
T-Mobile's like in the friend zone. But T-Mobile will get the Samsung Galaxy Tab. The company announced on Twitter that they're adding the Galaxy Tab 10.1 to their lineup. Unfortunately, they didn't say whether it was the Wi-Fi only or the model that has a data connection built in. They also didn't announce price or availability. In fact, they didn't announce much of anything, except they have it coming.
Hey, it's coming.
Which is more than they could say about the iPhone.
Cole Broadman is not going to like hearing that.
Take that, Cole.
Let's check out what's happening in the rumor mill. You like this one better, Sarah?
Much.
I thank Grant Garrison.
Finally, our typo has been solved.
For making a new rumor mill. That was one of the main criticisms on my Growing Up Geek profile. I was like, I heard this guy says Zed. What a douche.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
I'm sorry about that comment.
I never called you that.
I understand.
I never called you that.
Ice Cream Sandwich got a two-minute tour courtesy of a lucky eBay shopper. According to Engadget, reporting someone bought a Samsung Nexus S on eBay, and when they arrived, they noticed that it was running something new. Ice Cream Sandwich. Let's, do we have the video here, Jason?
Yes, we do.
We're kind of...
There we go.
Yeah, there we go. So he's got a video, or he's got the alleged Nexus S that he bought on eBay, launches it, and it's running ICS. Have you looked at this yet, Jason?
Ooh, no.
Mr. This is All About Android?
No, this is the first time, because it came right before we came
out
to do the show.
We await your expert opinion.
I mean, hey, you know, the lock screen definitely looks slicker. Different camera app. Yeah, it looks a lot different. It'll be interesting to see how this matches up. Who knows whether this is a fake or not, but it looks relatively legit to me.
I mean, this could just be a fan who made a ROM.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Like we really don't know.
It's a very elaborate ROM, if done. So it deserves credit either way.
Yeah, nice job.
They do kind of show the details from the about this
Photoshop.
Phone. And, yeah, I mean, you could fake all this stuff.
Yeah, but it's cool looking.
That's why it's in rumor mill.
Yeah, exactly. That it is merely rumor, but interesting. Go check it out at Engadget.com if you want to see it for yourself. And we'll, of course, have the link in the show notes.
It does seem to match some of the rumors that are out there about Ice Cream Sandwich in general. So some of these features do.
Like, yeah, where is the box?
Widget scrolling and all that kind of
stuff. I want to know that, too. Good question there, Web7203 in the chat room. Let's check the calendar. What's up, Sarah?
The Motorola Zoom 4G LTE upgrade process is beginning tomorrow, and new tablets will go on sale on October 13th.
Wow, that didn't take more than a year. Yeah. Actually, not quite. But well, it seems like it took forever.
Well, now it's right around the corner. The year went by so quickly. Flickr's new app is now available for Android. This is takes advantage of a lot more filters. And I hope it's a lot better than their iOS app, which I've hated for a long time now and does not have any cool filters.
Yeah, it's garbage.
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost a joke. The HTC Rhyme, which is formerly the HTC Bliss, which is also known as the Plum Phone for the ladies, is coming tomorrow, September 29th, for $200 and a fashion-forward two-year contract.
It's a styling contract.
Yeah.
It's nice. A lady package. Yeah.
It's in calligraphy.
Yeah. By the time those 2 years are over, fashion will have changed totally, and you'll need a new phone.
Let's check what's incoming.
Boing.
Oh, we have
no sound.
Yeah. We have an email.
Didn't play sound.
This one's from Ross. Dear TNT, I thought it was funny on yesterday's show that you were discussing how getting rid of the iPod Classic would make the iPod icon on the iPhone out of date. What about the picture of the telephone icon? How often does anyone even use a phone that looks like that anymore? Are future children even going to have any idea what that picture means? Perhaps we've culturally decided on what the iconic image of a telephone will forever be, regardless of how technology shapes the physical form of it. Perhaps we can argue that the iconic click wheel iPod image will forever be the image of a digital music player. Love the show.
I mean, people don't use phones like this anymore?
No, but...
I mean, they make Bluetooth handsets like this nowadays. So they still know what this looks like.
Yeah, I don't... You're like, show me some. Well,
I'm like, call me. Do people still get
somewhere
this?
Who has no idea what that is? But and I think it's still pretty.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when people do news sound effects and they make the sound of a typewriter clacking in the background.
Yeah,
like anyone uses typewriters to type news.
This just in.
Yeah, or even like HBO's got that white noise logo.
Yeah, the Telegraph sound.
Isn't that the white noise logo the HBO. Yeah, that stuff doesn't really exist anymore. Every time you see a cartoon with like a pen in it where they like can pull a lever and the ink squirts out of it. I remember as a kid thinking, I don't know who made that, but that looks like a pen to me. I think just stuff sticks with us. It becomes iconic, literally becoming icons, and we can't get rid of them.
Let's thank all of our folks at Reddit. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is the place where you can submit stories for our consideration. It helps us make the lineup every day. Thanks to Cheshu, by the way, for sending in the correct pronunciation of the username. Now I will try not to forget it. But also thanks to Captain Kipper, Brian in Houston, Neelam, Enjoy What You Have 83, Gordon McLeod, SkyJet, ITM204, and more for their submissions at TechNewsToday.reddit.com. And thank you, Scott Johnson, for joining us. Always great to have you on.
Well, thanks. It's always fantastic to hang out with you guys.
And let folks know about the whole Frog Pants thing and the network and the morning stream and the shows with the fun.
How does it
work?
And
the whatnot. I'd take too long to explain, but I'll tell you this. You can get the lady package for $4.99 today. Wow. No, it is all the details at frogpants.com. And better yet, if you want to know what's going on day to day, follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/extralife. There is always something happening.
That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT, where you can subscribe and get every single show delivered to you by a man in a trench coat with leather gloves, or possibly just download it into your podcatcher. And you can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a message. Why don't you ever call anymore? Is it because you don't know what that is? The number is 260-TNT-SHOW. You can just record an MP3 and send it to us at our email address. Either way, we want to hear from you. We'll see you tomorrow.